Company presents The Silver Theater, starring Rosalind Russell as President Ann Marshall in For Us the Living, directed by Conrad Nagel. Brought to you on behalf of two of the greatest names in silverware, International Sterling, world-famous solid silver, and 1847 Rogers Brothers, America's finest silver plate.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Conrad Nagel greeting you from the stage of the Silver Theater in Hollywood and bringing you the 27th in our new series of dramatic productions. Next week, Silver Theater will star Chester Morris and Glenda Farrell. Other brilliant stars whose names already grace our guest book for future dates are Robert Montgomery, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., Helen Hayes, and others. And now just a word before the curtain rises on today's concluding episode of For Us the Living by True Boardman. This is a story of the America of tomorrow. All incidents involved are fictitious, as are the characters concerned, and no reference to any figures in the political world of today is intended or implied. Here, rather, is the story of an idea and an ideal. Ladies and gentlemen, For Us the Living. The house lights dim as the silver curtain rises. The time? The early hours of a winter morning. The scene, a hospital near Baltimore. In a small reception room just off the main corridor, three men stand silent, nervous, waiting. Two are secretaries to the President of the United States. The third is Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. They look up expectantly as a door opens and a doctor approaches.
Doctor, the President...
I'm sorry, gentlemen. There was nothing humanly possible to be done.
Then the president is...
A moment ago. President Norman literally refused to die until the Secretary of State had arrived. But having seen her, I think he was content to go.
This is all quite incredible. Tell me, Doctor, I understand the Vice President...
Yes. Vice President Hubbard was killed instantly, Your Honor. I attended the scene of the accident myself and... He was beyond all help.
In that case, the Secretary of State must be sworn in at once. There couldn't have been a worse time for this to happen. With the unrest abroad, the threat of a general European war, it's... Madam President. Believe me, Miss Marshall, we, all of us, share your grief. President Norman was...
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Thank you.
Miss Marshall... Madam President, you're not leaving. The oath, Madam President.
Oh. I suppose it must be now.
I'm sorry, Miss Marshall. But technically, the nation is without a chief executive until the successor has been sworn.
I understand.
Your left hand on the Bible, Madam President. Your right hand raised. Please repeat after me. I do solemnly swear...
I do solemnly swear...
...that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States...
...that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States...
...and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States...
...and will... To the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And at 3:54 this morning, for the first time in the nation's history, a woman became its chief executive. Succession of Ann Marshall to the presidency has already reawakened the nationwide controversy prevalent at the time of her appointment as Secretary of State. In every section of the country today, there is strong division of opinion as to the effect this startling new development will have on...
A woman president. Brother, now I'll believe anything.
Well, it's too bad a fine man had to die to bring women into their rights. But now we'll begin to show the men a thing or two.
Probably wreck the country. That's what it'll do. A woman in the White House. She'll bankrupt the Treasury in 6 months.
How
about appointments, Madam President? Who will replace you as Secretary of State?
I'm appointing Mr. Will Taylor, the former Assistant Secretary.
Well, don't you think the women of the country would expect you to name a woman?
Well, Mr. Taylor is best
qualified.
Well,
how soon will we be moving into the White House?
I'm not sure yet, not
for some
time.
From your experience as Ambassador, do you think there's going to be war in Europe?
I hope not. I think no one can be sure just now.
What do you think of the so-called Women's Labor Bill just passed by the House?
I can't answer that. I haven't read the bill yet.
What about the budget, Madam President? What about the
And the Act further provides that all women engaged in said industry shall... Yes? Oh, Dad.
Anne, girl, you're not going to work all night again tonight.
I'm all right, Dad.
Don't you realize you can't keep this up?
Keep it up?
Anne, ever since the very moment of that accident to John Norman, you've been driving yourself, giving press conferences, reviewing bills, working yourself to exhaustion. You've got to stop it.
I can't. I wish I could. Dad, the moment I walked out of John's hospital room the other night, it was as though a curtain dropped, and every part of me that was capable of feeling anything had somehow ceased to exist.
Anne.
Do you know what John said to me just before he died? I can tell you his exact words. You mustn't be afraid, Anne. It's the biggest job there is, and it won't be easy. There are storms ahead that will take some fighting through. But you'll win. Because you're you, you'll win.
And he was right. You will win, Anne.
Oh, I must. We shared a dream, John and I. A dream for the future of this nation. It was because of that dream we gave up our love. And now, Dad, now I've got to fulfill that dream. Somehow I've got to fulfill that dream.
Madam President.
Good evening.
Good evening, Madam President. And a sincere welcome to the White House.
Thank you.
I'm Mr. Connors, the chief usher. Your bags have arrived. Do you wish to go directly to your suite, Madam President?
Yes, I will.
Oh, fine. A personal maid, have you...
That won't be necessary for now.
This way, Madam President. The elevator.
Good evening, Madam President.
Good evening. Oh, you needn't bother, Mr. Connors. This man can show me to my suite.
Very well, Madam President. And good night.
Good night. What's your name?
Zachary, Madam President. Zachary Ambrose.
You've been in the White House a long time?
Yes, ma'am. Right under 43 years.
My.
Here we are, Madam President.
Zachary, I want you to do me a favor. You see, this is my first time in the living quarters of the White House. Would you like to show them to me, Zachary?
You mean be your guide, ma'am? Why, I'd be powerful honored, Madam President. Powerful honored. And this, ma'am, this here's the yellow room where they hid the pony.
They hid the pony?
The Theodore Roosevelt children, ma'am. They used to all the time ride their pony up here in the elevator. One time the pony was lost. We finally found it right here in the yellow room, eating the flowers that was in a vase on yonder table.
Oh, Zachary, you lie like a gentleman.
Now, these stories I'm telling you ain't no lies, Madam President. I'm telling you the truth.
Zachary, where was Lincoln's room?
You mean his special room, ma'am? Well, that's right here. I was taking you in there next. This, ma'am. This here was Mr. Lincoln's study. And President Norman, he done use it for his office. He sure did like to hear about Mr. Lincoln, President Norman did.
So John Norman loved this room too, Zachary?
Yes, ma'am. Right over there, ma'am. That's where Mr. Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation in 1865. He started to sign it three times before he could finally make himself go through with it. They was all against him, you know. The cabinet and all the rest.
Yes. I know. They were all against him. Zachary?
Oh, ma'am?
I wonder if he was scared.
Scared, ma'am? Mr. Lincoln? Gosh, I reckon so. Ain't everybody sometimes?
Varying reports as the administration of President Ann Marshall goes into its third month. Although it is no secret on Capitol Hill that there is conflict between President Marshall and members of her cabinet, as well as with certain factions in Congress, those who predicted the country's economic collapse under a woman's administration seem to be proved false prophets. Dow Jones averages are generally higher, with only the constant threat of war in Europe preventing substantial rises. Meanwhile, activity in the White House is at an abnormal level.
That an allocation for underprivileged children must be included in the bill, Mr. Thomas.
Yes, Madam President. Secretary Taylor is waiting and a Mrs. Noon. Oh.
Miss Elam, please send in Secretary Taylor and ask Mrs. Noon to wait.
Oh, very well. Oh, the state banquet, Madam President. You're going to decide about the main course.
Who's the guest of honor?
The British ambassador.
Roast beef. Rare.
Yes, Madam President. Oh, come in, Secretary Taylor.
Good morning, Madam President.
Come in, Will. Will, what is it? You look concerned.
So will you be. Looks like this is really it.
War?
A cable just came from Sproul in Paris. There's an unofficial report that the coalition powers have issued an ultimatum to the Western Alliance. Unless the alliance will grant boundary and colony concessions by 8 o'clock, their time, the coalition armies will start to march.
You think it's true?
Don't you?
Oh, I wish I knew.
You know what it means if it is, Anne? It'll be the greatest fight you ever fought to keep this country out.
This country will keep out. It must. I have one more appointment, Will. Send in Mrs. Noon, please. But send me word at once if there's more news.
I'll do that.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
How do you do, Mrs. Noon? Won't you sit down?
Thank you. Madam President, I came to talk to you woman to woman.
Yes?
I'm sure that you'll understand that I and my organization have only the best interests of this nation at heart.
I'm sure of that.
Miss Marshall, we feel that you should resign the presidency.
I see. You have a reason for that opinion, I presume?
Naturally. As a woman, Miss Marshall, you should have helped the cause of women. And yet you appointed a man to a cabinet post that you vacated. And you actually vetoed the women's labor bill.
That bill was vicious. It would have harmed the cause of woman labor a dozen ways to everyone it helped. I happen to know that President Norman had decided before his death to veto that particular measure.
Oh. And therefore, you couldn't possibly do anything else. Not if John Norman said so.
Why, I... What do you mean by that? Mrs. Noon, I asked you what you meant by that remark.
All right, Madam President, I'll tell you. And I'll tell you the real reason why we don't consider you a fit person to occupy the White House. We know why John Norman insisted on naming you Secretary of State, and it had nothing to do with politics. You were together in Prague when he was minister, over 12 years ago, and you were supposed to be his secretary. But you left there after 6 months. No one ever quite knew why. But that wasn't the end of the affair. Oh, no, Madam President. You met again a dozen times.
Be quiet, do you hear? Oh, things are clearer to me now. I've been wondering why the people couldn't seem to understand the things I've tried to do. I've even thought that perhaps an ideal for this or any other nation was just words, and no one ever wanted to see it brought to being. But I know now, Mrs. Noon, and I understand. It's you. You and all the others like you who can cocked your little eyes and then rejoice to whisper them on their way.
What?
You who, if you prayed forgiveness till the day you die, would still be unworthy even to speak John Norman's name. Now get out of here. You heard what I said. Get out of here.
Very well. You needn't think the women of this country won't hear of this, Madam President.
Will you get out? Oh, John. John. They should dare. Their narrow, filthy minds. John.
for a big job, Anne. Perhaps the biggest job there is, and it won't be easy. There are storms ahead that will take some fighting through, but you'll win. Because you're you, you'll win.
Madam President, Anne, what's wrong?
No. You have news. What is it?
War, Anne. War in Europe. The armies of the coalition have begun to march.
War. Oh, God. Oh, God in heaven. Give me strength.
In just a moment, ladies and gentlemen, you'll hear the last of our two-part drama, For Us the Living. And while we're waiting for the curtain to rise once more, I'd like to say a word about International Sterling's new pattern in solid silver, Prelude. Like the inspired music it was named after, Prelude is a revelation in beauty. Its lines are rhythmic as a song, its proportions perfect. And the flower motif, carved with such exquisite delicacy and restraint, has a special affinity with the new romantic mood of today. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, Prelude is solid silver. Silver that says to all the world, here is a woman who has taste and background, a woman who loves beautiful, genuine possessions. Truly none but the most skilled of craftsmen could fashion this resplendent Prelude Sterling. But nearly every one of you can own it. And here's the man to tell you how. All right, John Conti.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to buy a complete set of Prelude Sterling, you can easily do so right out of income. Or, if you prefer, you can start a service by getting one or two individual place settings now and adding sets at your convenience. A place setting of six lustrous pieces costs only $16.75. But tomorrow, Monday, go wherever the best silverware is sold and see sets of Prelude Sterling. You'll be honestly thrilled by its beauty and amazed to realize that the kind of silver you've wanted all your life is now easily within your reach. Solid Silver by International Sterling.
The silver curtain rises on the concluding act of For Us the Living, a story of the America of tomorrow, starring Rosalind Russell as President Anne Marshall. The long-awaited war in Europe has come to pass. In the air, on land, and on sea, the fighting forces are in desperate conflict. And as the fury mounts higher and even higher, it finds its counterpart in a steadily rising tide of sentiment within this country, a tide that uncontrolled can only lead to our participation in the war.
American embassy bombed. Read all about it. American embassy bombed by coalition planes. Angst
me. An American ship of 8,000 tons sank mysteriously in the Mediterranean. Evidence points to a submarine of the coalition navy.
They're bombing women and children, the coalition. Why doesn't that woman president of ours do something about it?
We gotta stop them now, or they'll be over here to bomb our towns. So write the president into Congress. Let's make them understand we want to fight.
Madam President, I speak for the Department of War. These other gentlemen speak for the respective houses of Congress in which they serve. The people want action, Madam President. They demand action.
We are taking action.
You call it action to merely send a note of protest when one of our ships is sunk by the coalition?
These things always happen to neutrals in time of war. Don't you see
I that see it's... you're taking every means to avoid the real issue. That's what I see, Madam President.
If you mean I intend to keep this country out of this war, that's true.
But the people want war.
I don't believe that, Senator. Some people may want war. The yellow newspapers of this country may want war, but the people, particularly the women, will stand for peace. I'm sure of it.
Then how do you account for the telegrams, the letters? Each of us receives hundreds, even thousands, every day. There is one cry in them all. War. Let's fight the coalition.
And suppose they do say that. There was a time the people said, let's fight against England. 54, 40, or fight was a battle cry throughout the nation. But we didn't fight England. We found another way, and we must find another way now. Oh, please. Please believe me, all of you. If I were convinced this was a cause that justified the sacrifice of American lives, I'd do the thing you asked, gentlemen. I'd assemble Congress and ask for a declaration of war. But this war in Europe is not our battle, gentlemen. We would only make its horror greater were we to join. Believe me, our only course is peace.
Gentlemen, I believe I warned you that we were wasting our time. Madam President, the members of this committee will give you exactly 3 days' time to change your mind.
You will give me 3 days. And then?
Then, if necessary, we shall take other action. Good afternoon, Madam President.
Wait! Gentlemen, please! Zachary?
Huh? Oh, Madam President. Madam President, you look powerful upset.
Zachary, will you do me a favor?
Well, you knows I will, ma'am.
I'm going into the study.
You mean Mr. Lincoln's room, ma'am?
And I want you to stay outside and be sure I'm not disturbed. Will you do that, Zachary?
Will I? I sure will, ma'am.
John, I came here because somehow you always seem closer to me here. Maybe it's because this was his room, too. And you and he saw things so much alike. I need help, John. I've tried, as I promised you I would. But now, I guess I'm just not strong enough alone. What should I do, John? You would have known. And so would he. Mr. Lincoln would have known. He had the same decision to make once. But it wasn't the same. It wasn't John. Lincoln meant... Well, he set men to fight to save this nation. I wouldn't be doing that. I can't see how I'd be doing that. What is the answer, John? The answer you'd have given.
The dream, Anne. The dream we shared together. I haven't fulfilled it. Perhaps I never would have. But you and you.
The dream. I do remember, John. A patriotism of peace. That's what you wanted. I know now. I know now, John Norman. I'm sure I know now.
You may come in, gentlemen. May I request that you be as brief as possible? The President has had virtually no sleep for the past 3 nights.
Madam President has our sympathy, and we can be very brief. What is your decision, President Marshall?
My decision is unaltered. I will not assemble Congress and ask for a declaration of war.
Very well, then, madam. By tradition throughout American history, it has been the president who took the lead in declaring war. But never before has there been a chief executive who deliberately defied the will of the people. President Marshall, in case you are not aware of it, the Constitution states that it is Congress which actually declares war. And tomorrow we shall assemble on our own initiative and vote the declaration.
Very well, Secretary Bates. You're right. I can't stop you.
Come, gentlemen.
But, Secretary Bates, in case you are not aware of it, the Constitution also states that the President is Commander-in-Chief of all armed forces. Vote your declaration of war, and I will not order a single man to fight.
You wouldn't dare.
We're only being constitutional, remember.
Very well. You leave me no course. And I warn you, Madam President, I shall personally see to it that a resolution is introduced tomorrow asking for your impeachment.
Impeachment? On what grounds?
Treason, President Marshall. Plain and simple treason. Your secretary is correct when he says you had no sleep. And I know why. I have proof that you have for the last 3 days been in constant contact with the American representatives of the coalition powers, with the enemies of this country.
Thank you.
House requires further evidence in support of the impeachment of President Marshall, it is abundantly at hand. Quite apart from her unpatriotic attitude toward the war, we have sworn testimony that during the week just ended, President Ann Marshall was in frequent contact with agents of the coalition powers. And furthermore...
I must interrupt the speaker. A news dispatch has just arrived which materially affects the resolution before this body. With the permission of the House, I will read this dispatch. At 2:52 this morning, an armistice was signed between the powers of the Northern Coalition and the Western Alliance. Basis for the armistice was secret mediation conducted in Washington by the President of the United States.
I assure you that Washington has never known a reception to which I considered it a greater honor to be invited. My congratulations.
Thank you, Senator.
There was one question I wish to ask. Why secrecy in such a matter? Surely if we had known such...
Considering the temper of our own people, Senator, they might have disapproved of mediation. And besides, as it was, you and Secretary Bates and the rest were my allies.
Your allies?
You were my threat. The suggestion that I would agree to your demands went a long way toward making the coalition powers agree to peace.
Madam President.
Oh, Will, that demonstration outside, do you know what...
Yes, I know what it is. It's a mob of your citizens descending on the Capitol.
A mob?
A mob of patriots, Madam President, who have suddenly discovered that what they wanted all along is peace.
A patriotism of peace.
And at the moment, what they really want is the sight of their chief executive. You better go out on the balcony, Anne.
All right.
Come, gentlemen. I think where we belong at the moment is out with that crowd.
It's the beginning, John. It's not the whole dream, but it's the beginning. And we're on the road at last.
This is Conrad Nagel again, ladies and gentlemen. I know you'd all enjoy a personal greeting from our lovely star. And Miss Russ will be back to speak to you in just a moment. First, I'd like you to hear about something that can bring you and your family lasting enjoyment. All right, John Conti?
That something Conrad mentioned, ladies and gentlemen, is 1847 Rogers Brothers Silver Plate. Silver Plate of such striking beauty of design and superb craftsmanship that it has been recognized for more than 92 years as the finest silver plate in America. In recent years, this famous house has added still greater luster to its name by developing a technique that gives sterling-like detail to its gleaming silver plate. You can see it in the graceful pierced pattern Love Lace, a pattern delicately wrought which uses wreathed orange blossoms for rich ornament. Right now, 1847 Rogers Brothers offers this exquisite silver plate at substantial savings. A service for 8, 62 pieces in the Lovelace pattern can be purchased now at a saving of more than $14 over open stock price. And on easy, convenient payment terms, too. Visit your silverware dealer tomorrow, Monday, and see this gorgeous set. For this is your opportunity to own silver plate that bears the design prestige of America's first great craftsman. 1847 Rogers Brothers Silver Plate. And now to Conrad Nagel, who has brought Rosalind Russell to the center of our silver stage.
Well, Rosalind, you have our congratulations on an excellent story idea in For Us the Living and on a wonderful performance.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Conrad. I am very grateful to Silver Theater for having accepted the idea of doing a play about a woman president. And to True Broadman for his brilliant story and dialogue. I believe we touched upon something a little more important than just a play, and I hope others think so too. And Conrad, it's nice to work again with people who do such excellent radio programs as you and create such a lovely service as your new solid silver pattern prelude. It reflects beautifully the tradition of international sterling craftsmen. The very first time I saw it, I was thrilled beyond words.
Oh, thank you, Rosalind.
You're welcome, Conrad. Good night. Good night, everyone.
Good night, Rosalind Russell. Thank you so much. And back to us again soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rosalind Russell is co-starring with Robert Montgomery in the new Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture, Fast and Loose. Next week, Silver Theater will star Chester Morris and Glenda Farrell. John Conte speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.